Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Oh, yes, indeed. Welcome, welcome, thrice welcome to an extremely lovely man. And hooray for Hollywood, because we're broadcasting all the way to LA, quite close to Malibu, I believe you live, from the various things I've seen, the cliffs of which you're walking on often in Facebook, in an aquamarine blue shirt quite often. But this is Seamus Light. You're very welcome.
Hello.
Oh, I'm glad you're speaking. That was the sound of one man clapping there just to introduce you to The Clearing, which is lovely. So Seamus is a broadcast and talent and brand management agency. You used to be in the UK, but you've been living in LA. I know you know this. I'm just positioning you. And you represent a carefully curated roster of both United States and British based talent. Also, I'm very warmly regarded to you as well, because you've been incredibly helpful in giving me some help, guidance and advice as this particular journey of The Good Listening To Show has got going too. So you are extremely welcome. How is morale and what's your story of the day, Seamus Light?
I've been here 5 years, as of actually next week. And previously, I was an agent in the UK for 20 years. And the news of the day is it's sunny.
Well, as it would in nearly always in Malibu, the sun is shining, which is lovely.
I'm near in West Hollywood, but my husband and I go to Malibu every Sunday with our dog, just because where we walk, which is near a friend of ours, it's just a beautiful place because it overlooks the ocean, but from above. And it's just, we've just started doing that every Sunday, and it is spiritually enriching.
Wonderful. And I'm delighted you're getting lots of spiritual enrichment as well. You have an interesting backstory. And when I first heard about you about 18 months ago, around about that time, you did have quite an extraordinary diagnosis. I remember me hearing about and then me discussing with you. And if you don't mind me naming it, it was called a glioblastoma tumour and brain cancer.
Yes. So, in fact, March seems to have a very strong resonance in my life right now, because we moved here on the 1st of March 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And then 2 years ago, of course, the world ground to a halt. Absolutely. In March. And then last year, on the 3rd of March, it happened in February, but the operation to remove the brain tumor happened on March the 3rd. So March, I'm not sure whether I want to delete it out of the calendar or embrace it, because it has it always seems to have a very huge event in it, but mostly unplanned.
And in terms of cycles of life, have hitherto Marches, you know, there's Beware the Ides of March from Julius Caesar, of course, but has March featured very heavily in your life now you look back?
No. Not really. I mean, my husband's birthday is in March and a couple of my clients' birthdays in March. But for me personally, prior to, you know, if we go back over 10 years before, no, March was also always a time when I would come to LA. I used to travel on business. I'd come here 3 times a year and it would always be March, October and December. So I guess it has, but not, it's never been a planned thing. It's just sort of happened that way.
And your husband, and is it pronounced Wish Heart or Wise Heart? I think what a great name for a husband, a wise heart.
He has a very wise, very good heart. It's Wish Heart.
Wish Heart. Wonderful. So, and how long have you been married? I know I'll give you a prize for that's the right answer, but how long have you been married for?
It will be, 9 years this September.
congratulations. And how is the diagnosis currently going? Because obviously this March, happily to report, you're going to be almost, well, you're in remission, I'm understanding.
I feel I am. I'm not officially allowed to say it until year 4 or 5. So I have MRIs every 2 months in this current year. And my next one coming up is, I'm having it this Sunday. And then I will have what is now my Zoom with the doctors on Monday morning. It's incredible here because, you know, I know friends who have been in similar, not the same diagnosis, but needing care in the UK and have had to wait weeks, if not months, between an MRI and result. And I'm very grateful that it's so swift. So, but this one will be the longest one I've had since stopping chemo, which I did earlier this year. So, or rather last year. It's an important one, but there's no reason to expect it to be anything other than clear.
And as you know, this show also pulls into the UK Health Radio space. So that's why I was particularly interested that you were OK to talk about the condition as well. So yeah. Would you like to say or explain a bit more about what a glioblastoma tumour and then and the brain cancer that goes with it, or maybe it doesn't, but just explain the condition?
From my understanding, because I'm the sort of person, I'm very squeamish about all of these things. So everyone around me is very well informed. I never even Googled it, but I did recently read an obituary of somebody in my industry in England who died of this recently of the same thing. And I didn't even know that normally people die within 12 to 15 months of having this diagnosis. So what it is, I didn't know at the time, but I was having seizures. And I was doing a writing Zoom with somebody I'm working with on a scripted project, who's also a very close and old friend. And apparently my face fell on one side and my husband said I was slurring. And my friend rushed over, Kevin, and said, "We're taking you to the hospital." I didn't want to go. But I said, "I'm not going." And they forced me and I went, and this was last February of 2021. And my husband was allowed into the emergency for a short time because of the COVID restrictions. He had to leave and I had to wait 6 hours for an MRI. And at that point, I had no idea what was going on, but I'd always, and it's totally unrelated, but I have a twisted spine, scoliosis, and I'd always had very bad headaches. And my biggest fear was I was going to be rushed to an emergency room and they were going to tell me I had a brain tumour. And I got to live that in real time, although it was a lot slower. I had an MRI at about 2 a.m. They got me into a hospital bedroom and came in the morning and told me. But I was able, I came home and then I had a week to get ready. And then I went to a hospital on the morning of, March the 2nd, I think it was, or March 1st, sorry. And they removed a brain tumour, which was 4x4. And I'm a neat freak. And I did learn about cancer often that when a tumour has what they call fingers and they can stretch into other areas. Mine was terribly neat. All my fingers were going inside the tumour. So they got it all out. And I was incredibly lucky. I had the top brain surgeon in America. And I don't know how lucky I can be. And she did a fabulous job. And I was out of hospital in a week. And I was very determined to get back to some sort of normality. And I was swimming within 2 weeks, which I do every day. I've been incredibly fortunate, but then I had to do 6 weeks of radiation and chemotherapy, and then a regime of 1 week on, 3 weeks off chemo until I think it was October last year when we finished chemo, and I've been doing regular MRIs, and now I just continue to take anti-seizure medication, which has a wonderful side effect of feeling exactly like a seizure.
How convenient.
Which, yeah, every day. And I've got used to that, as used to it as you can. But it stops you from actually having seizures. And but I do have to take that twice a day. And that's the thing I live with now. But I've been incredibly fortunate because I also ended up in the top brain cancer oncologist in the world. And this was, you know, a story of my life, a higher power looking after me, and very good friends who happened to be able to reach out to those people. I've been incredibly fortunate.
And I was very struck in one of the previous conversations we've had where you said your daily routine of what you've got to take for medication gives you that giddy combination of feeling tired, anxious and nauseous, you said.
I'm having it right now.
Oh, gosh.
Because adrenaline can actually sort of spike it, if you like, as sugar can spike it, foods can spike it, anything can spike it. So it's a question of going, I know what this is.
Yeah, and hopefully Chris Grimes can't spike it, which is the important thing.
It's the general excitement of seeing you.
Thank you. And the sort of comedian in me also noticed you said you had a 4x4, which sounds a bit like a plank of a tumour. So when you said 4x4, is that related to the fingers of it? Or
no, it's like, I think 4mm by 4mm. Ah. It was, you know, it was very neat. I genuinely, because of my husband is very good at and enjoys the medical side, I've handed all of that over. I tend to sort of go into blackout over that because then I don't think about it. I just think about getting well. So, but I do know that much. And I have to look at, like on Monday on the Zoom, they'll show me my brain scans. And it's the oddest thing, seeing your own brain. And the one from above, from the cranium down, it's very odd. It looks like, it actually looks like an animal smiling. It's the parts of the brain, the way the image looks, which is very odd.
Do you think brains per se look like that, or Seamus Light's brain just happens to look like an animal smiling, or do you think everyone's brain does?
It looks like a llama smiling. It's a very odd thing, if you can imagine it. But no, I think I have no idea. I've only looked at my own brain a little bit, and many others I've ignored.
By the way, that's very relatable. I have played a sociopathic llama in Aardman's Shaun the Sheep, the Farmer's Llama. So if you do look like you're having a seizure, I'll try and seize you by spitting at you as a llama, if that helps.
That's fine. Call 911.
UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So on a daily basis, it's when I'm swimming in the morning. On a weekly basis, it's when we're walking around that park in Malibu. And occasionally, we are able to get to a place in Thailand that I find to be incredibly freeing. And it's just one of the most special places I've ever been and feels very calming.
So that's how you've given us three for the price of one then. So which one would you like me to arrive enigmatically with a sort of existential tree to shake your apples? Where we can either go to Thailand, be on the cliffs of Manibu, or we can be in the swimming pool. Or is it the sea that you swim in? Where do you swim?
I never swim in the sea. I would say my morning swim, because that genuinely gives me that, it's almost like meditation.
And is it the immersion in water? Are you swimming underwater and describing how you swim?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Most of the time.
And so I'm assuming we're doing breaststroke, or are we doing a combination of different things?
Different things for exercise and stretching. Yeah.
go for you. You're very versatile in your swimming strokes.
So I try.
I'm now going to plunge into your pool rather comically with a tree. Hello. And we're going to shake your tree now. So the 5-4-3-2-1-X says you've had 5 minutes to have thought about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention and borrow from the film Up. That's a bit, well, squirrels, you know, what never fails to grab your attention. And then finally, a quirky or unusual fact that we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. So we're now in the soggy canopy of your tree as it sits next to us as you swim along. If you can pause for a moment now to tell us the four things that have shaped you.
I have been thinking about this morning because I wanted to have some time to just let it settle in. And I think genuinely the four things, as a child at school, I was fat and I'm gay and I was not a joiner in a, and so I was bullied a lot. So that shaped me in my early years, that abuse. And then 22 years ago, I got sober. So that's one of the biggest things that's ever shaped me. And then with the cancer, that has obviously shaped me, but it shaped me in a way that I understood love and care in a way that I'd never experienced or understood before from others, especially my husband.
Wow. So let's just pick some of those apart a bit more as well. So when you also said you're sober, are you completely, you are an utterly, you abstain completely now?
100%.
Because it sounded like when you said you were fat and gay, of your own words, and then you said, and I got sober, I thought that was all part of the same fact.
Sorry, no. That for my early years and into my teenage years, the bullying, I think, shaped. I think anyone who's had experience of bullying, it shapes you. And it gives you sort of an indication of how to move around in the world.
Yes.
And when I was 30 years old, I got sober. And that then shaped me and really informed me who I was.
And in terms of your physical state of being larger than you might have been, I mean, I've always perceived you and known you in the 2 years that I have as being incredibly slim and not at all bearing too much weight. And so was the stopping alcohol, did that also help change the shape as well? Or was that not related?
I did lose. If you stop drinking, if you drink a lot, you will lose weight just because of that fact anyway. But no, When I went to drama school, I did a drama 2-year course before going to a London drama school. And because of the amount of exercise and dance and movement classes, I lost a lot of weight then. And I've never really put it back on, you know, occasionally. Little COVID weight we all put on. The cancer got rid of that.
And you actor trained before becoming an agent then?
Yes, which is not an uncommon path. I did an ONA level drama course in East Sussex, where I grew up. And then at age 18, I got into Webber Douglas Academy in London, in Clareville Street, as it was then. It's now owned, I believe, by Central. But then it was one of the top classical drama schools in the country. And so that was aged 18, 19 until I was 21. And so that we were doing 70 hours a week, mm-hmm. which was, you know, people don't understand, I think, a lot. They think probably drama school is just a lot of fun. I had friends at universities at Oxford and in London and other places, and they were having to do maybe 5 seminars a week, yes. which seemed to be exhausting. And I'm like, I'm doing 70 hours.
Yeah, and that's very relatable because obviously I was at Central School of Speech and Drama doing a teaching degree, or Screech and Trauma, as it was called, as you mentioned, Central now owning Webber D. And yes, and the discipline involved then in going to the Bristol Vic Theatre School, it's absolutely, as you say, a 70-hour week. And of course, COVID has made, my own daughter's been at university during the COVID times, and of course the contact hours are almost non-existent. And so it's nearly all about home study.
Wow.
What are we paying for? It's all good stuff. Yeah. And do you have any brothers or sisters, Seamus, as well?
I do. I have one brother, and I have a sister who sadly passed away a few years ago. But I'm not really in contact with them because I'm here.
And in terms of the bullying as well, how did you make peace with that once you'd left school and moved away? Because going to drama school, it sounds really a confident choice. Maybe ironic if, you know, you're not feeling very confident if you had a tricky path to get to that point.
I was one of those people who was bullied and abused who used it to go, right, you're not going to get the better of me. I am going to succeed at whatever I do. And drama school seemed to me to be, if you got into a drama school, you'd be a fool not to go. And I was lucky enough to do so. I also thought that I would be with a lot of other gay people. And funnily enough, there was no one at my drama school who was out apart from me, to my utter horror. Well, actually, one other person was, to be fair. But I had assumed it would probably be more. But Webber Douglas was quite a small school compared to a lot of the drama schools. Yes. I think there were only about 150 of us spread over 3 years. So not big.
And the four things that have shaped you then, have we wrung those out, would you say?
Yeah.
In which case, we move seamlessly into three things that inspire you.
The thing that shocks me the most and inspires me, because it's always such a joy to see, is selfless acts of others. And I use that as an example. It's when I see somebody doing something and caring for an individual that they have no relationship to, and they're not looking to gain anything from it. They're just doing it to be of service to somebody. I find that is just incredible, and it's inspirational because it teaches you how you can do it yourself. And it helps being, seeing what I am capable of, or what another person is capable of doing selflessly. The other thing is nature. That always, if I'm walking in nature, in fields or, in woods, or just even, we have a balcony here that's very long, but quite narrow. And I grow jasmine and I grow all of these bee-friendly plants, and I grow, I have an orange tree, and hummingbirds come onto the balcony, and they're coming to, feed on the plants that I've grown. Blows me away. I've even been able to take photographs, which again blows me away, because normally if you see one, they fly off quite fast. So the third thing that inspires me is when I'm working with a client and we're working together on a project that's a passion project that I know is actually going to do something good, as well as, create an income and further the careers of others. But ultimately, it has an underlying good message attached to it.
Lovely. I'm just bathing in the jasmine, the orange flowers, and I got a bit stuck in the hummingbirds as well. So you get daily close enough to them.
Right here, literally. They I sometimes look out, and there was one every day when I was in my early recovery after the operation. I would lie outside on the lounger, and there was one that just kept coming just to the first plant beyond where I was sitting, and I would just watch it, and it was mind-boggling that I'd grown something that this little hummingbird came to every day.
And that there is something about your calm and poise that something, obviously nature's always very discerning about what it comes close to. So you're obviously transmitting or emitting either a sense of recovery or a sense of poise, at least, that you are still enough for it to approach and sort of dine on the nectar that you're providing by being there and present.
That's a nice idea.
You're welcome. And in Thailand, where you mentioned you love to go to, just tell us a bit about that as well.
It's a very special place. It's where Andrew and I went on honeymoon, and it's a very beautiful, quiet resort, and it's on a cliff, and it has within the sort of it has a very large amount of land that the resort is on. They have 50 gardeners, to give you an idea of just the scale of what they have. And they also have a temple, a small temple, which is, I think, a lot of people do. They even have them outside their houses in Thailand. And there's this one, and they do a ceremony once a week. And if you're staying there, you're invited to join in or just observe. And often, we've been three times now, and I've been on my own with the person doing it. And he's told me the story of what's going on and what they're praying to. And I've been, you know, part of that, just him and I at 6 a.m. in the morning in this incredible, beautiful location. And it, you know, you're overlooking the sea again. And it's just incredibly quiet. You don't know that anybody else is there. And it's very special.
And there's a recurring theme of being high up in what you're really enjoying. So there's the balcony, there's the cliff, there's the cliffs of Malibu, and then Thailand, again, it was high up. Because when you first mentioned Thailand, I was thinking of swimming and then, you know, the various islands like in Phuket and places like that. I was thinking sea level, but it seems you get most of your succor within the heights, it would seem.
Yes, I when I lived in London, I had an apartment that was, I wasn't high up, but I had this great view straight out, and it was just sky, nothing but sky. It was by Battersea Park. And I love having sort of a lot, you know, a big view.
Yes.
It just feels safe, and it feels, you know, has space and calm. So it's not about having sort of the best view. It's just having a view where you can see for a great distance.
And during the course of your recovery and your sense of liking a vista and a view, and obviously there's something that you do enjoy, great peace. Has that been very helpful in your own mindset of what you were, you know, how you know you can recover?
Yes. Sunshine is the key. I've always loved it. And it was one of the main reasons that I started coming to Los Angeles 22 years ago now, was the sunshine. When I was able to come here on the, you know, the otherwise colder months in England, I found it always 10 times harder to get motivated and get started when it was a grey day. And as you know, that unfortunately can be a lot of the time. But even if there was just 10 minutes of sun, it made all the difference. And it just fills me with energy and optimism.
Lovely. And the clearing's all about having your moment in the sunshine as well. So I'm hoping you're feeling a bit bathed in the day spa, if your brain is continuing. So I think we've now rung out the three things that inspire you. So now we're going to talk about two things that never fail to grab your attention. Oh, squirrels, if you have seen the film. So what never fails to grab your attention?
It's animals, but really specifically dogs. Anytime there's a dog anywhere, I'm excited to see the dog. I adore animals and I love dogs. I find that they are the most incredible, kind, natural, authentic beings on the planet. You know, they're just, and they're always happy.
And they're always doing the clock of now. That's, it's always totally now. And the joke is, of course, you know, even if you do or don't have children, I appreciate you won't. But the idea being that why you get a dog is that at least someday someone's going to be pleased to see you every time you come home. That sense
and
of presence.
We have one and she is.
And you got, I noticed from a Facebook post, you got her on Valentine's Day, didn't you? You were saying.
She was born on Valentine's Day.
Okay. Yeah.
And we got her 8 weeks later in England. And as I said, lived by Battersea Park, we'd take her and she was this big. And people would literally just come up and pick her up without even asking, because she was so incredibly friendly. And she's so friendly and so approachable and very robust. And she loves all forms of travel. And she flew out to LA on her own a month after we moved here.
In first class, I'm hoping, or first pooch class.
Well, it was a very large crate, maybe. But, you know, that she'd probably been in that for 14 hours. And her first thing wasn't to, you know, go, I need to pee. she just came running out, had a good old sniff around, and then had a pee, and then carried on life as though nothing had changed.
I definitely need to pee first myself, so I do admire her for that. Yeah. Wonderful. So she, I like the fact that the derivation of squirrels is borrowed from the dog anyway. So the fact that you so admire the dog in being your chief squirrel expounder is a good thing.
She's obsessed with squirrels as well. I mean, she adores sunshine, so she's always sunbathing outside. And whenever we're walking around, there are a lot of trees around here, and she goes crazy for squirrels.
And being a Battersea dog versus an LA Hollywood dog, if you were to ask her, what do you think she'd be telling you she'd prefer?
LA, she loves sunshine.
It's the glamour and the showbiz of sunshine. So you've all found the sun, obviously, in where you've decided to live. So you won't be coming back to live in dreary old grey sky London anytime soon.
No, we've actually just applied for our citizenship.
Ah, okay. And is that a long to be drawn out yet process, or that will just happen because you've been there?
It should happen this year. The process has started. So I'll be an Irish, British and American citizen.
I didn't go for the... Obviously, Seamus Light is an Irish name. So what part of Ireland were you born?
I was born in Sussex, but my family goes back. We used to spend about a month every year in Ireland, in County Cork, right down on the coast in a place called Clonakilty, Roscarbery, around there. And that was a lovely area.
And when were you last there?
1986.
That was a very clear answer, a long time ago.
I would like to do that one day. I'd like to show Andrew where my grandparents lived and the areas, because even then it was very special, because it was like going back in time. Even in the 80s, they had the phones where you pressed A and B. We even had a wind-up phone one trip, you know, the old-fashioned ones.
I do. And if you show a sort of teenager an old phone nowadays where you have to wind it, they just don't know what to do with it. There have been lots of comedy videos on YouTube where people try and work out what are you supposed to do with that then.
It was such fun. It was beautiful. The kindest, friendliest people ever.
And the next thing that never fails to grab your attention, we went dogs, and then I've gone down another rabbit hole. So what's the other thing that never fails to grab your attention in your squirrels?
Nature. Just anything. The fact that I have lavender growing all year long, whereas in London it would be for a month and I was thrilled. The jasmine, anything that I've grown, we grow our own chilies and all our own herbs. And it's just amazing. It baffles me because I don't really know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I learn from watching the plant. If it's not happy in one position, I know it needs to be moved. So I don't pretend to know how to do it, but I learn how to do it. And when they're all in blossom, the jasmine, especially around in LA, sort of from about this time until early May, you walk through clouds of jasmine in West Hollywood, all over the place, and it, because there's a lot of it growing. And that is just unbelievable, because as anyone in England will know, if you're lucky enough to grow jasmine, it's a short-lived thing. I tried many times, and there's always a very harsh wind. I think it's in April or May, and it just used to batter it to pieces, and before it even had a good chance to blossom. So nature, it always astounds me, because it's so adaptable.
And by the way, whenever you write your book, it should be called We Walked in Clouds of Jasmine. It sounds like Sting's next album cover as well, a bit like Fields of Gold, but Clouds of Jasmine.
If it's not Clouds of Jasmine, it's Clouds of Marijuana, because it's legal here.
Because of where you live.
Yes. Like, wow, you're smoking early.
And I suppose you've got the excuse of it being for medicinal purposes too, should that be to your taste.
I wouldn't be able to, but yes. But it's a very free and easy place.
So you've just really sort of piqued the senses there. We walk through clouds of jasmine and marijuana as well. Lovely, a giddy combination. Wonderful. So now then, the quirky or unusual fact about you, Seamus Light, we couldn't possibly know until you tell us.
Well, This was a tricky one because some of the wonderfully quirky stuff I'm not even allowed to talk about because they're covered by NDAs. But I will tell you that I was very lucky enough to be a good friend for over 15 years and manager for 10 years of Carrie Fisher. And she gave me the most incredible entry into Los Angeles and Hollywood in a very gentle and unassuming way. And she had the biggest heart, the kindest nature. She was also a powerhouse of intelligence, along with those people who were around her, who were incredible too. And the fact that I got to hang out, I used to stay with her. And she said when I moved here, unfortunately she died, but I was with her very shortly before she died. And she's saying, where are you staying when you move? And I said, we're staying at a hotel for the first couple of weeks while we find someone. She went, no, you're staying with me. You're staying with me for the first 2 months. We didn't obviously end up doing that, but that's the kind of heart she had. And I learned afterwards by talking to a mutual friend, Stephen Fry, that, and I didn't know this, that during the AIDS epidemic, people, she let people stay at the house and even camp on her garden when the, you know, people who had AIDS, and that was in the very early days. She was an incredibly kind woman, as well as being wonderfully funny. And we had a lot of fun times together. Not in the sort of glitzy glamour of Hollywood, just the calm, kind, and in London. We spent a lot of time in London together, walking around, and you would never have known who I was walking with because she wasn't like that.
She was able to dial it down and blend in a bit more.
Yeah, she loved being normal, you know, and just being able to do what other people do, as well as all the wonderful things that she got to experience in life. And I miss her every single day.
And were you representing her whilst you, at the time you were moving around to move there to America?
Yes.
So you're already...
I was her manager in England. I didn't get involved in her American work. She had agents here. But I was still able to do that from wherever I was.
That's such a lovely story of how, yeah, what a great connection to have had, and the fact you miss her every day. And I know she was a trailblazer in so many ways. I know she struggled and was on lots of documentaries to do with depression as well. And in fact, there was a series of documentaries where also Stephen Fry appeared in them as well, talking very searingly and honestly about their journeys with depression.
Incredibly kind people. And she was also very generous to everybody, but she was always giving you gifts. And there isn't a room in our apartment, even outside on the balcony, where there isn't a little something that she's given me, as well as wonderful stories and all the messages we would text each other. I was able to keep all of those. So I have those, the memories, and, you know, she's above us watching.
And to have been the agent to Princess Leia, how exciting. Very lovely.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We have shaken your tree in the clearing, and now we're going to stay in the clearing where hopefully you're still getting bathed in sunlight and we can smell jasmine. The smell of the marijuana's wafted off now, but we're back with the jasmine and we've got hummingbirds and it's just lovely.
And so now we're going to talk about alchemy and gold. And you're sort of giving me this anyway by the bucket load. But when you're at purpose and in flow, Seamus Light, in terms of your alchemy and gold and what you're here to reveal to the world, what are you absolutely happiest doing?
There are three things. Gardening, not knowing what I'm doing, but giving it a go. Swimming, and what I call our family day, Sundays, with our dog Tilly and my husband, and just walking, you know, just being right. That's the simple happiness. And I guess on a bigger scale, it's flying somewhere fabulous in a fabulous way.
That's the other book title. Just hold that pause. Flying somewhere fabulous on a fabulous day. You've got lots of book titles that are there just waiting for you.
Yes, it's. I think travel is so exciting. And if you're able to do it comfortably, and I will move heaven and earth to do that, then it's more of it should be an occasion. And it's the excitement and the looking forward to. I think that often looking forward to a trip weeks before can sometimes even eclipse the trip itself.
Indeed, the excitement and the anticipation. And by the sound of it, you're quite accustomed to turning left on the aeroplane.
I have been very, very fortunate. I found a way to use air miles and find air miles and talk very nicely to people in airports.
Yeah, it's important you know who to befriend. I love that. And I'm sure your clients would help bump you up as well anyway, obviously, because you've not been well of late too. So you just need to sort of play that card.
I would never do that, but it's tempting.
That's so lovely. That's a really clear, lovely rule of three for your alchemy and your gold. And now I'm going to award you with a cake, Seamus Light. Do you like cake? I know sugar, you said, can set you off, but do you like cake?
It's a funny thing. There's a thing here called red velvet cupcake. I have avoided red velvet cupcakes for years, thinking that's not my type of thing, until somebody said red velvet cake is chocolate cake, it's just colored red, and I went, I had no idea, because I but so yes, I do like, I like cake, but I don't like icing. I just like the moist cake. That's nice.
So we're going for a nice red velvet chocolate cake is what you can have. Tis yours. And then now this is the final storytelling metaphor, where you're going to get to put cherry on the cake, if you don't mind putting a glacé cherry on your red velvety chocolate cake. And this is stuff like, what's a favourite inspirational quote that's always given you succour? And or it could be, what notes, help, guidance or advice would you proffer to a younger version of yourself? And then finally, here comes the Shakespeare, inspired by all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. I would finally like you to talk about legacy, Seamus Light, and how, when all is said and done, you would most like to be remembered. So over to you to put a cherry on your cake.
So I think to tell my younger self, your dreams are going to come true, because aged 5, and I don't know why, but I knew I had to be in America. And there was no reason or anything. I just knew. So not to worry and stop worrying and just keep at it is what I tell my young self. You know, when you have a gut feeling about something, I've always felt that that's my higher power talking to me. Like, I've had gut feelings not to do something and I followed it. Don't do that. I feel that it is... if you should follow your gut instinct, because it's always something bigger than me trying to give me, you know, stop doing that, do that, don't go there.
So your higher power's got a waggling finger by the sound of it.
Yeah, and do not ignore the voice. But yeah, I remember I was 5 years old, maybe a couple of years old, but around that age, and I just knew I had to be in America. And I didn't know anything about America, and I don't know why, but I always did. And the first trip I did to I came here to New York when I was 16, and my first trip to LA was when I was it was about 2 weeks after 9/11 had happened. And I set foot outside LAX airport, and I went, huh, this is nice.
And there is a through line of the higher power here where you overcame bullying, knowing that there's something else going to guide you and pull you through and sling your shot through. You're not going to get me. I'm going to prove you different. And also your remission, there's this higher power as well. So in terms of your own belief system, do you want to just tell me a bit more about the what you believe the higher power represents for you?
It represents that there's a strength. There's something. I'm not religious at all. In fact, I'm very anti-religion because it always seems to be, you know, everything I'm doing is wrong and repent. Yes. But I'm spiritual. I believe in a higher power. I believe in, you know, that there are angels guiding. There are angels guiding us. And if you connect with that spirit, be it nature, whatever it is, that as an individual you feel is something higher and stronger than you, that's what I have. And because I know the trouble I could have got into when I was younger, I was always just plucked out of danger just in time, and I shouldn't have been. It could have gone a different way. So I have a very strong faith in something bigger than me, and it is that gut feeling that guides me. And I listen to it, and it comes through other people. You know, there are people I trust, and they will direct me in the right way. I've always had mentors, be it in work or in life, and I've allowed that guidance to be the correct one for me, and it's always worked out. You know, if you need help for a legal situation, you don't go to a doctor, you go to a lawyer. So find the person that's going to help you achieve your dream.
And the higher power was present again as you overcame the diagnosis and on the journey of that too, and the path of that.
1,000,000%. When I came around from the operation, I didn't check my body physically. It was almost like I said to myself, oh yeah, I'm still here. The person that is Seamus is still here inside. That's what I needed to check, because I didn't know what was going to happen when they take part of your brain away. I'm using the gap for storage now, so it's fine. But I was lucky. I knew I was still here. I knew that because laughter is unbelievably important in my life. If you can't laugh at it and enjoy that, then, you know, what's the point? So there's been a lot of laughter throughout this whole process.
I adored that, by the way, the fact I'm now using what they took out of storage space. That's very funny.
There's still a hole. There's a quote I would say I live by a lot today. It's, what is meant for me will find me.
Yes, another book title. They're all there. You're going to release an album by the end of it. Lovely.
It, you know, other people have said it. I'm just taking it because it resonates with me. And it's true. You know, what isn't meant to be for me won't be. Don't fight it.
And there's a calm and a poise in that as well. It will come if it's right.
I've always found that, and it's somebody else's saying, and I know it to be, again, very true. Rejection is God's protection. And sometimes you don't realize it at the time. Sometimes you see it a couple of weeks later. Sometimes it's a year later. You go, oh, that's why that didn't work out. Thank God. I mean, I don't, you know, I believe in my spiritual version of that. But, you know, just thank goodness that I was taken out of that situation, or that didn't happen. Because had it happened, it would have been bad for me.
Rejection is God's protection. I love that. So how would you most like, to borrow from Shakespeare and all the world's a stage, how would you most like to be remembered? What's your legacy going to be?
Kindness.
Okay, where can we find out more about Seamus Light on the hinterweb?
Seamuslight.com.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
It is okay not to know, and always ask questions.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to me, Chris Grimes, and Seamus Light, who is a wonderful broadcast and talent management and brand management agent with a global reach, speaking to us from his home in LA. So thank you very much indeed. Until next time, good night. You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@ThatChrisGrimes.
So until next time, for me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio and from Stan,
to your good health.
Goodbye.